following is a production of the Media Ministry at New Salem Baptist Church in Soddy Daisy, Tennessee, featuring the teaching of Pastor Alan Rogers. In the Metro Chattanooga area, we invite you to be our guest at any of our weekly worship services or visit us online at newsalembaptist.net. Now here's Pastor Alan.
Question for you this morning as we think about Father's Day. Where have all the real men gone? We live in a society today that is having a real tough time trying to figure out what masculinity and femininity really means. A few weeks ago on Mother's Day, we talked about how some people in our society have tried to elevate men at the expense of women and how that goes against God's original design for men and women to complement each other and to work together to steward over creation. But on Father's Day today, we have to acknowledge that just as some in our society have tried to elevate men over women, we also have some of those in our society who've tried to elevate women at the expense of men. And that's turned out with just as disastrous results. Just look at how men are often portrayed in the media and in pop culture and in social media. I mean, today, it seems like in the movies, men are more likely to be portrayed as the villains or as comic relief than as the heroes. Men are often the punchline for the jokes. And there's even been a movement the last few years to go back and remake a lot of famous films, only this time swapping out the male heroes for female leads. Sometimes they do that, it's rather, you know, it's a direct remake, and sometimes it's a lot more subtle, but that happens. Let's be honest. It's true there are some men who can be truly awful to other people and have done terrible things. But there are voices in our society who would label any expression of what we traditionally consider masculinity as toxic. And that cultural disdain for men and for masculinity in general is having an impact. Because for nearly a decade, experts have been noticing that fewer young men are going to college. Now there are actually more women attending college than there are men. And even fewer men are graduating. Our military has been having a tough time finding a few good men to serve in the ranks over the last several years. Churches are having trouble finding qualified men to serve as pastors, staff members, and deacons. Just this past week, I heard the president of Lifeway lament about the difficulty they're having with finding staff for some of their youth and children's camps. He talked about one camp that has 17 staff members. 14 of those positions this summer are filled by women because they didn't have any men apply. And yet, we have younger boys coming up that need good, positive male role models. Where are they? Where have all the good men gone? Our modern society's confusion about masculinity has not only led to men checking out and giving up in a lot of places, just kind of throwing up their hands saying, y'all get on without me, but it's also sparked a counter-reaction that tries to reclaim masculinity. And unfortunately, the end result is often more a caricature combining some of the worst stereotypes about men. I mean, I call it, in conversation, I call it the Viking warrior model of masculinity. Now listen to me very carefully here, okay? Because I'm not trying to offend anybody, I'm just trying to get you to think. Long beards, bulging muscles, and tattoos may be a cool aesthetic, okay? But that's not what makes you a true man. Our young men are besieged with messages telling that real men are rude, crude, and ready to smack down anybody who gets in their way. And that is not what true masculinity is all about. We live in an age where politicians gain support not based on their character or their competence, but because of their willingness to push back against the other side. And while we need people who are courageous and can draw lines and stand by them, that's not what real masculinity is. Stable societies are not built on top of men like that. And that fact should be especially evident to those of us who claim to be followers of Jesus. In fact, in Jesus, we see a paradigm of true masculinity. And it's a very different image than we see in much of today's conventional wisdom. We often turn to Ephesians chapter 5, verses 25 through 33 for instructions about marriage. But standing behind those instructions about marriage are the person and the example of the Lord Jesus himself. And Christian husbands are called to treat their wives and families in certain ways because those ways demonstrate the character of Jesus. So if we're looking to recapture a true biblical pattern of masculinity, Ephesians 5 is a good place to start. And I want to encourage you to turn there right now. And as I read this, I want you to follow along, and I want you to note how Jesus is described in this passage. Husbands, love your wives as Christ also loved the church and gave himself up for her, so that he might sanctify her, having cleansed her by the washing of water with the word, that he might present to himself the church in all of her glory, having no spot or wrinkle or any such thing, but that she would be holy and blameless. So husbands also ought to love their own wives as their own bodies. He who loves his own wife loves himself. For no one ever hated his own flesh, but nourishes it and cherishes it, just as Christ also does the church, because we are members of his body. For this reason, a man shall leave his father and mother and shall be joined to his wife, and the two will become one flesh. This mystery is great, but I'm speaking with reference to Christ and the church. Nevertheless, each individual among you is to love his own wife even as himself, and the wife must see to it that she respects her husband. Listen to me. Even men who are not husbands and fathers can strive to be godly men. Even though this passage was originally written to husbands, it has application to all men who claim to be Christians. These character qualities do not magically appear the moment you say I do, but they have to be cultivated from the beginning, from the time that one is born again and decides to follow Jesus. You will not exhibit these qualities during your marriage if you have not been developing them before your marriage. Likewise, men who are older or widowed can be an example to younger men in the way they demonstrate and teach each of these qualities. And the pattern for godly men is found in Christ. Notice how the character of Christ stands behind all of these qualities that Paul puts forth in this paragraph. I mean, sometimes he does it explicitly. Verse 25, we're supposed to love our wives just as Christ also loved his church. Verse 29, just as Christ also does the church. Verse 32, I'm speaking with reference to Christ and the church. Even though Jesus wasn't married during his earthly ministry, he demonstrated these qualities in what he taught and the ways he dealt with other people, especially his enemies. And so Jesus is our paradigm. He is our pattern. If Jesus calls a person to deny himself, take up his cross, and to follow him, then we are called to follow Jesus' example in our relationships, especially in the relationship with our spouses and our families. So what is that example? How do we live that out? What are the qualities that we need to be cultivating in our own lives? Let's walk through those real quick. First of all, a godly man follows Christ's example by loving his wife. Jesus loves his church unconditionally. The word that Paul uses there in describing Christ's love for his church is the Greek word agape, which you've heard me talk about many times. The Greeks had multiple words that represented the word love, each with a different nuance or shade of meaning. This particular word was a very special word because it talks about a love that does not love for what it can receive, but it loves for what it can give. Agape love is the kind of love that is interested in the best interest of the one being loved, seeking out that best interest. Agape involves an affirmative choice that we seek the best interest of the other person. And Jesus did not choose you because of what you could offer to him. He chose you because of what he can offer to you. It's like in the Old Testament, God told Israel, I didn't choose you because you were the most powerful, the biggest nation, the richest nation or whatever. I chose you because you were the least. And so often, God comes to us and calls us to himself through his son Jesus, not because we're so attractive, but because sin is so ugly. Jesus chooses us. He reaches out to us. He loves us because of what he can bring to us, not because of what we can offer to him, because we have nothing to offer. What does that mean in terms of masculinity? Well, so much of what is offered as masculinity today treats others simply as objects to gratify yourself. And it breaks my heart to see our young men being taught that way through pornography, through materialism, through all these other avenues that other people just exist for what they can bring to you. That's a lie. True masculinity doesn't seek others for what they can offer to you. It seeks what we can bring to others. A real man focuses on the needs of other people. And this is a choice. It's a choice that has very little to do with feelings. It has everything to do with commitment. You hear me here? So often we associate love with a feeling. That's not love, that's attraction. Okay, and attractions can wax and wane. Feelings can rise and fall. But real, genuine love is a commitment. And following Jesus means becoming the kind of man who's invested in seeking the best for his wife, who's invested in seeking the best for his children, and stands by that commitment. One of the reasons that we have so many divorces in our society is because so many people enter into the marriage relationship with the idea that, hey man, if things just don't work out, I've always got the escape hatch. You know, we can just hit the eject button and start over. Being committed to one's spouse and one's family requires you to do some hard work. When you make that commitment and you say there is no back door, then that means you got to work through it. And let me tell you, there is joy and God is glorified when we come out the other side of some of those issues. I could tell you about situations in my own marriage where, you know, we would come to an issue or a problem that threatened to separate us or divide us. And it was the commitment that we made as a young couple that divorce is not an option, that we're in this for better or for worse, that required us to work through those things and actually made us a stronger couple as a result and brought us through those things as better people. And it starts with an agape-type commitment, a choice to love, not for what this person can bring to me, not for how this person makes me feel, but because of what I want to invest in this other person, how I want to bring out what's best for them. We need more men who are willing to make that kind of commitment and that kind of investment. And let me tell you, it takes courage to make that kind of commitment. To say, through thick or thin, I'm here. That takes courage. Something else we can learn from the example of Christ. A godly man follows Christ's example by sacrificing for his wife. Going back again to verse 25. He loved the church and gave himself up for her. Jesus demonstrated this unconditional love by offering his own life on the cross for our sakes. Jesus didn't just say he loved us. He proved it. And true love doesn't seek its own satisfaction, but is willing to sacrifice itself for the sake of others. And this kind of sacrifice is a lifestyle, not just an event. Jesus' sacrifice on the cross was the culmination of a life of putting the needs of those he loved against his own prerogatives. I mean, think about this. Jesus left heaven for your sake. According to Philippians chapter 2, he set aside all the glory that went with being the Son of God to accept the limitations of a human body, to dwell among us, to get out in the dirt like us, and to see what it's like to walk in your shoes. Would you give up heaven for the people sitting next to you? Jesus left heaven for you. Jesus washed the feet of those who should have been washing his. He served those he loved. Don't tell me you'll take a bullet for your wife if you have trouble remembering to take the trash out. You hear me? Don't tell me, yeah, I'll throw myself in front of a speeding train, but I ain't going to help with no dishes. Now, true love sacrifices, and it starts with the small things. Here's another thing about that sense of sacrifice. Often it demonstrates more strength to respond to others in gentleness than to retaliate in anger. One of the lies that is often pushed on men today is that real men push back. Somebody hits you, and this is something that's really bred into our culture around here. I'm very proud of my Scottish heritage, okay? But there's some things that go along with that heritage that aren't, make me not so proud. And one is this clannishness and this wearing our hearts on our sleeves. And if somebody goes after one of ours, we're going to go after theirs 10 times as hard, okay? That I'm not very proud of, but it's a fact of life. It's woven into our culture. Somebody hits you, you hit them back. It's kind of like what they called up in Chicago, the Chicago way. You know, they put one of yours in the hospital, you put one of theirs in the morgue. We can relate to that, right? But that's not a measure of masculinity. Sometimes the real man is the one who holds back and says, I could retaliate, but I'm not going to. And that is especially true in church. Folks, it is especially true in church. We are more like Jesus when we are slapped and we turn the other cheek. When we don't react, we don't have that knee-jerk reaction. And it is so hard because it's going against something that is ingrained in so much of us by both our local culture and our society as a whole that says when they hit you, you hit them back twice as hard. Jesus says, no, deny yourself, take up your cross, and let's go. And that means turn the other cheek. When Jesus was assaulted, when he was beaten, when they pulled his beard out by hand, when they rammed that crown of thorns on his head, when they drove those spikes through his wrists, aren't you glad he didn't strike back? Do you remember what he told his disciples? This idea of if they hit you, you hit back. His disciples got that because in Matthew 26, verse 51, when those men showed up to arrest Jesus in the Garden of Gethsemane, what did one of them do? One of the disciples pulled out his sword, started lopping off ears. Do you remember what Jesus said? Put that sword away. Don't you know that even right now, I could appeal to my Father and he will at once put at my disposal more than 12 legions of angels. Now, I don't know about you, but 12 legions of angels could do a lot of damage the way I see it. Jesus said, I could call all the armies of heaven to take up for me. Aren't you glad he didn't do that? Because if he had, you and I wouldn't be here in more ways than one. Sometimes it takes more strength to be gentle and to not hit back than it does to strike back. Following Jesus sometimes means taking the temporary loss in order to gain a greater victory. A godly man also follows Christ's example by seeking to contribute to his wife's sanctification. In verses 26 and 27, why did Jesus offer himself up? So that he might sanctify her. That means purify her, having cleansed her by the washing of water with the word to present to himself the church in all her glory. And the image here that Paul is painting is one that many of us men got to experience. When I remember the day that Melody and I got married, we wanted to get as many of our pictures out of the way beforehand so that our guests wouldn't have to wait for us at the reception. So they took all the pictures with her. She left the room. They took all the pictures with me. And then they left me in that big sanctuary over at Concord Baptist Church by myself standing up front. And then the door opened in the back, and it was almost like the light of heaven coming through that door. And there comes my bride, first time I saw her in her wedding dress. And so she came down, and we had our pictures made there in the front. And I'll never forget that. That's the image there. She was so beautiful that day. And some of you men know what I'm talking about. But that's the image that Paul's using here of the groom seeing his bride coming to be presented in all of her preparation and finery. Jesus is sanctifying and cleansing his church to prepare for that day when he comes to claim his bride. And that, men, is an example that we can emulate by the way that we invest in our families. Jesus didn't seek to dominate his church, but to sanctify her, to bring out the best in her. And real men seek to bring out the best in those around them by leading the faith and then training them as disciples. That responsibility begins in our homes. It's the Great Commission applied to the most basic and important relationships we have as men, our wives and our children. But be warned, you cannot lead anybody anywhere you haven't been yourself. You can't contribute to somebody else's sanctification unless you're being sanctified yourself. You cannot cultivate in others what you have failed to cultivate in yourselves. And men, that gives us a huge responsibility, not only to see that our families are led to honor and love the Lord, but to make sure we're honoring and loving the Lord in our own lives, because they will respond to what they see in us. I shared with you about the Wasulu tribe earlier today, how they are one of the keys to reaching their entire people group, because the men are the gatekeepers. But you know, the same thing is true even in a modern Western society. When you look at the statistics of, if you bring the kids to church first, how often the parents will be reached. And when you get down to the bottom, when you reach the fathers, then it's nearly a 90% chance that the kids will follow. Our kids are watching us, men. They're watching how we treat their mother. They're watching how we treat other people. They're watching to see if we are consistent in our own walk with the Lord. And we have a responsibility to demonstrate what it means to follow Jesus by following him ourselves in their presence and by investing in them to train them as disciples as well. It's a heavy responsibility. But if we're going to imitate Jesus, it's one we have to take on. A godly man also follows Christ's example by serving his wife. Verses 28 through 30, we read about how husbands ought to love their wives as they love their own bodies. Jesus taught us one of the most important commandments. So love our neighbors as ourselves. Amen? And the family is the primary arena where men can put that commandment into practice. A Christian man will treat his wife with the same consideration and care that he expects to be shown himself. Not there to dominate, but to serve. Because we believe in marriage, that husbands and wives become one flesh, any good thing a husband does for his wife, guess what? He's actually doing it for himself. It will pay back dividends. So men, don't seek to dominate your wife. She's not there to be your slave. She's there to be your partner. Don't expect her to serve you. Instead, nourish your wife. Cherish her. Nourish her with encouragement and support and love and affirmation. I heard a very well-known Christian counselor once say, a guy who sold an awful lot of books, said, men, the smell of 409 is one of the most powerful aphrodisiacs in the world. Don't expect your wife to do it all. Roll your sleeves up and get in there and help her. Does that mean that she needs to help you mow the yard? I'll leave that up to you. But nourish your wife. Cherish her. Follow the example of Jesus, who did not come to be served, but to serve. And to give his life as a ransom for many. The Marines used to advertise with a slogan, "We're looking for a few good men." Our world is in desperate need of a few good men. But our world's very confused about what those good men look like. In Jesus, we have the paradigm of a truly good man. Not only did he give us an example to follow, but when you're walking in faith with Jesus, he empowers you to live that example. What Jesus is looking for is for a man who will deny himself, take up his cross, and follow. So my question to you today, gentlemen, is will you be that man? Will you be the one who takes up his cross, gets in line behind Jesus, and starts setting the pace for your family?
This program is a production of the Media Ministry at New Salem Baptist Church. Music courtesy of Jason Shaw at audionautics.com. If you enjoy this program, we would love to hear from you. Email us at info@newsalembaptist.net. Thank you for listening.